Thank you very much for coming again. I believe that one of the things that we want to caution or be aware of is if you cannot hear in the back, somehow either pass a note or do some waving or something. And of course, we will ask the speakers to speak into the microphone. We could just go right ahead and launch. I hope to leave a little time for questioning. So if you have questions, formulate them while you can. This morning, we're beginning with a talk by Marcus Farner entitled Book by Design, The Creative Processes of Farner and Farner. I'm going to introduce Barbara Farner, who's not here. She's in Germany, but she is a partner in this collaboration. And so I'll read a little bit about Barbara. Barbara was born in Allenstein. I'll get all the pronunciations incorrect. East Prussia, and grew up in Hanover. She studied medicine and then later art. In 1979, Barbara founded Edition Leider and began producing artist books. In 83, she founded a paper mill with Susan Hostetler. From 1986 to 87, she worked on the Kunstkammer project, and in 1997, she embarked on the five-year-long project. This is where I will definitely not be able to. Zweit Encyclopedia von Thlon, a major project by Fauna and Farner. Since 1990, she has had a close project-based working relationship with Granary Books in New York City. Many of her works are part of private and public collections, and the list is stunning, of course, the Herzog August Bibliothek, Museum van het Boek in the Netherlands, Victoria and Albert, Library of Congress, the Sackner Archives, the Getty. Today's presenter is Marcus Farner, who was born in Frankfurt am Main and grew up in the Frankfurt Book Fair, I'm told. Later, he ventured beyond Frankfurt to study literature and publishing in England, where he met his beautiful wife. He's designed and printed his first story, The River Niger, in 1987 in Oxford. In 1995, he started Anansi Book Arts, selling artist books mainly in England and in Germany, and he also participated in the Zweit Encyclopedia von Thlon project. His books have been acquired by many private and public collections, including the Museum van het Boek and the Victoria and Albert and Library of Congress. Since moving with his wife Fitna and their two lovely children to Vancouver, British Columbia, Marcus has opened a design firm and recently designed the prestigious Alcuin Society Canadian Book Design Awards catalog, which if any of you have missed it, then you should try to get a hold of a copy. We have several representatives from the Alcuin Society amongst us here, and Marcus is one of them, of course, and Leah Gordon and Josef Wask are down here, and a few others. Marcus.
Thank you. Good morning, all. Well, first,
microphone. Use the mic.
Okay. All right. I'll lean into the microphone. I hope you can all hear me. Good morning. Well, first of all, I want to send my apologies from my mom. She would have loved to be here. And the idea was that we give the talk together, and then my father's health, well, took a downturn that was expected, but yeah, it took a little turn for the worse, so she decided not to come out and leave me with this little speech. So obviously I'm taking over her part, and I said, okay, how can we do this? So she went to her little notebooks and index cards. And I said, well, why don't you pull out a few index cards? And, you know, based on these, I'll interview you and we'll see how that works. And then Barbara came back with, I think, about 30 or 40 cards. And I think that's just also an indicator of the scope of her work. It's always very big. So I said, no, I think 40 cards might be too much for this talk. So I'll narrow it down to 8, which is probably not fair, but I think that's all as much as you can stand. What I have decided is not to talk about how we do our books, about our bindings, about our printing techniques. It's really more about the creative processes, a little insight, a little glimpse how her mind, I hope I can convey that, and how my mind works when we're producing books. I will be cycling through some of the images. So they will be running in the background. I will not actually refer to each book individually. I mean, of course, if you have later questions or, you know, come up to my table, I'm more than happy to discuss them and you can look through them. But this is just about our ideas. So her first card read, "The book is a transportable tool which serves to explain the world." Barbara says she always felt an urge or maybe a compulsion to have the world's puzzles explained. She considers that the world's sort of, there's a, you know, base is like a riddle, and on one side it's gruesome and very painful, and the other side is a majestic, unlimited creation. Her second card, "The book is a box which makes it possible to push the boundaries between different types of media. It allows one to play with different materials and to even use them to cancel each other out." She sees herself as following two paths, one which is a very intellectual one, research, lots of research, and the other is a spontaneous one, a path of creation. She's constantly reading up on her subjects, taking notes, ranging from philosophy to natural sciences, perusing old botanical texts. The spontaneous road to creation is that of simple pleasures, to draw, to get out there, to draw, to take sketches, to paint, and to explore the uncharted territories of her mind and of her creativity. It is important for us, she says, to develop art of observation, of deliberately watching and observing. It is a way of living, and that's her way of living, is her way of creating books. A third card reads, "Paracelsus regarded nature as a book which should be studied, not to brood over, but instead to be contemplated." Barbara lives as a creator of books. It's a life choice that embodies many pathways. It's the freedom, she thinks, of the artist to describe different pathways and to collect randomly what she finds along the trails of that path. The fourth card is, where possible, it is a deliberate choice to avoid following the straight and obvious path. Walking hand in hand with nature does not mean taking the idyllic, beautiful forest path at every turn. It might lead us to gruesome corners, or it might lead us to beauty. This, she means, that she's open in her work to political and sociological issues, but without trying to turn her books into demagogical works, political treatises. She deliberately, years ago, chose the humble medium of the book. She, you know, Barbara used to be a painter, or she still paints. Many years ago, she decided that the book offers a perfect form for expressing her work. She can combine media, she can express all her ideas and her vast collection of research in, as she says, the humble medium of the book, which is very small footprint. Years ago, she went to the Art Cologne and watched some of huge art projects, which she considered were a waste of resources. They were just massive. And that upset her to the point when she thought, I really do not want to engage in a path that leads me to creating big projects, huge projects, which are based on, you know, a lot of waste. And then she said the book with this small, humble beginnings and its small footprint is ideal to express this. Her fifth card is, we push research along, we consider all kinds of problems, as if one day we could reach the thought which could free us all, based on. This is one of her driving forces. She realizes that this idea that we could be free to have this one magic thought that would solve all riddles will never arrive. But it is that, actually, that very moment that keeps her on producing books, that keeps her researching and researching her quest. And is that's the beauty of that. We will never reach that moment when, you know, all our questions will be solved. And that way she can go on making books forever. Her sixth card reads, Adorno Horkheimer writes, the inner sense of the subject is based on nothing but the gentleness and the richness of the external world of perception. Card 7, again Paracelsus. Is it not true that all the sheets of grass and flowers and trees which push forth from the earth are just as many books and magical symbols? I think it's most who've seen Barbara's works know that botany and biology are some of her most favorite subjects, which she always returns to. Paul Klee thought that the most important act in creating is to bring things and matter out of the realm of silence. Barbara disagrees strongly with this. She believes that we humans are the ones most blind and dumb, and that things and matter are very, very chatty indeed and have a lot to say to us if only we observe and then translate it. She has written many books about certain plants. One of her favorite plants is the nettle. She is fascinated with fungi. And the mushroom, I think, being a subject she and John Cage shared and discussed a lot while they were working on their book, Nods, which was published by Granary Books in New York. I think Steve Clay is here amongst us. It's a wonderful book. It's always a matter where she returns to. Right now she's working on a big project, and half of the project are pictures that she has taken from all strange matters that end up in her sink, in her studio, and macro images of, well, I don't know, whole worlds that are emerging in her sink, but they're really just plaster and thrown away things. But it is amazing when you look at them close up. She seeks to intertwine the poetry of botanical and alchemistical text, and releases very poetical instances that she finds in her research into her texts. And sometimes creates really, really long. I mean, one long book is The Flowers Are Yellow, where she has taken other than hundreds of pages and transcribed all botanical texts and analyzing them. Alchemistic art, to Paracelsus, is the constant search for better and brighter and more refined states of existence and of visions. Barbara's work can be perceived as musings turned into art. It is obvious that her language is one of metaphors. She is not a literal painter who aims to create a copy, a precise copy of the world. She aims to detect the spontaneous, the surprising, and bend them into her books. In her books, she creates a space which protects her and gives her a space of happiness, but also of melancholy, a place where she can indulge in her quest for knowledge. Why does she do this? John Cage would certainly have not hesitated to say, we should not ask the why, we just do. Barbara goes along with this and she says, I just do, there is no why. The secret life is not a problem which must be solved. It is a reality to it one needs to experience, writes Schrödinger. Myself is probably, as you heard, I grew up on the book fair, so I couldn't escape all those books. I sometimes spend time outside fairs as well. But somehow they always kind of pulled me back. And I think that little research fever or bug has caught me as well. I spend a lot of time researching my books and probably writing too many notes. And then there comes a point when these notes and these ideas spark and create a little project. Literally anything can be turned, any idea can be turned into a book. I think it's crucial to have an open mind. Once the idea is formed, it's time to research. And that's the very fascinating moment of a book project. In each book, there is a microcosm, which when you read through it, when you see the external notes, unfolds this macrocosm. Books offer an ideal or unique relationship for our ideas and research and images. This dynamic flourishes and stretches out. My research drives me further and further to the point where eventually one book happens or two books happens, and then additional ideas are sparked off of this and in turn generate new projects. Not all of them lead to a book eventually. I think it's important though for our work that the research does not stop at it's not a purely intellectual level. The fascinating part of making a book for me is the relationship between content and the very material work of the book. Certain contents demand certain typefaces in my mind, certain layouts, and once found, once the idea has found the way it wants to express itself, and suddenly the end product jumps out and from the world of ideas and makes its debut in a concrete display of demands made by paper, made by book dimensions, production and binding techniques. I like this tension of the idea and the material world that forces you to engage with it and to go certain pathways which you might have not originally thought would be necessary to go. Sometimes projects grow over many, many years. They have to ripen, they have to mature. It is important to walk outside the realm of the book itself to find new ideas. I spend an incredible amount on my computer, probably way too much. The beauty of book production for me is that suddenly my ideas, my work, spills now over into the physical world. I can remove it from the computer. I can remove my research, my writings from the computer, and suddenly, before you know, you're holding a book in your hand. The text becomes attracted, finds its own images. I enjoy taking pictures. I enjoy illustrating my work. manipulating images which I've drawn. And then one day comes the next phase, the production. My latest book is called Hellbox, the Book, and that speaks about that love and that fascination. It's a fascination with the machine, with the production. That part which edifies our ideas, which connects the dots. It unites and removes the sort of the ephemeral moment of our research and ideas and brings it down into a physical world. The craft becomes the root, which creates in a very physical presence. There is something, it's like a little paraphrased excerpt from my book, is most printing presses appear to be bulky, muscled, and even crude beasts. There are massive wheels and cogs, heavy breastplates, armored clad arms, a squat, fat little knight comes to mind. Even the ink can be seen awkward in its shiny, sticky essence, unwilling to spread from roller to roller, to plate to paper. The sound of a well-oiled press is one of strength, is kind of muscular music. However, what only appears to be a craftsman's delight is also something else. Make no mistake, it is full of strength and power, but then it is also full of fine and gentle quality. A sheet of paper is produced with the finest impression. Unwieldy ink gently guarantees a smooth imprint, creating leveled, balanced black surfaces. Sheets lift off and reveal fine images. Thin ascenders type little arms stretching out to its neighboring sister. A moment later, it produces a boldly inked sans-serif face full of vigor. The oiled chest plates, the bulky body armor of our knight, is capable of turning out the finest print. It's a wonder observing these machines in motion. Again, as Barbara considered, it is vital to listen to the material world, to look closely, providing a never-ending source of ideas and books. Farner and Farner books are constantly searching for new ideas. For us, it is very important to create new content, to find new content. Our artist books are the product of our philosophy of always being open to new impressions, embracing that which triggers our creative mind. It is this need to observe and research which feeds and makes necessary the expressions and creation of newfound text and images. When creating a book, I love how the images can interact with my text and create ever never-ending sublayers of meaning. The creative process for us is always open, that we either work together. Barbara has used some of my text in her books. I have on many occasions used her images in my own books. But there is others who have inspired us. Recently I was inspired by the incredible vitality of my daughter's drawings and a very strange little story. And that led me to create a book. It's Travelot and Me. Just the title alone which she came up, I thought it's fantastic. I'm fascinated by modern technology. I'm running this slideshow of a little iPad, love web-based projects, but sincerely, we both love the physical aspects of the book. Books are very rugged, portable, and seductively tactile. I always encourage you to actually touch our books and feel them. That in a way, tactile and seductive, which no electronic device can ever replicate. And not to mention the smell of a good book. That is very important. The fascination of the book is that once it has been produced, it takes on its own form of existence. Its sheer physical presence in the world makes it a force gives it a spatial effect. The book will reach out of the present and into the future. It will speak of ideas as much as it will tell a tale of craftsmanship and of creating an art. A book or a text is about the appreciation of both message and techniques which serve the message. If your book is done really, really well, then, or you've done it correctly, the letters, the layout, all in a sense disappear and create their own harmonious cosmos. The book becomes invisible while the reader peruses the message. The thought or idea to be communicated acquires or loses force, directness, clearness, lucidity, beauty in proportion to the fitness of typography and layout employed in the medium. We have been making books, well, not I, but Farner and Farner, Barbara, for a good 30 years. My own books are probably about 15 years ago I stepped into it. And we've been selling our books to libraries and private collectors, ranging from book fairs in Frankfurt, London, to the wonderful Codex Fair here. I recall the rush, in the early rush, to buy artist books, a time when many European libraries were, you know, rushing to fill and set up their collections, and they would buy, not by the cartload, but they were buying lots of books. And they were Barbara's first typewriter books with a modified Japanese binding and sewing machine. That's the type of books they would find at that time. Recently, I got an email from a collector who bought, must have been one of my first works. I was only 9 years old, I don't know. He still moves around with them. And he asked me if I was still doing art. And I said, yes, yeah, you could. And it's funny. There was a time, I think that was when he bought those images. That was at the time when Barbara had one of her first large exhibits of art books in the Mariamano Museum in Holland, in Den Haag. And then about, I think, 10 years later or 15 years later, they bought my first art book. And that's sort of an example of the many parallels that you could find in our artistic lives. In early 2000, Barbara had the idea to find the lost encyclopedia from Borges, Story, Tlön, Ukbar, Orbis Tertius, the second encyclopedia from Tlön. For 5 years, we worked on this artist encyclopedia, Barbara Fitnet, that's my wife, and myself. That project is only like a small part of Barbara's far-reaching and all-encompassing way of approaching work. There's been the Kunstkammer project in 1987, Kunstkammer being a cabinet of curiosities, which featured 16 wall charts and 84 unique books, and opened up a botanical microcosm. Presently, she's working on a project which she thinks will be even bigger in scope, 84 unique books, and this will be bigger, so we have a big box containing all these at home. She could not make herself sell any of them. This one is about notions of surface, depth, notes, and lists, and seeking to connect patterns there. That's a lot of macro photography, close-ups, stills of what I mentioned you, things she finds in gutters, and things like I say in there. In one of our previous incarnation, we ran a paper mill for a couple of years, producing marvelous handmade papers, which eventually led to a large exhibition in Germany about an imaginary seascape. The books were printed on letterpress. Now that I've, I think, found my final destination, my haven up in Vancouver, I'm considering to buying a press, so we finally settled down, so I think it's time to get my own. It is the book and the ideas which involve that, which has always been the center of our interest. That's how we express or transform our ideas from books to broadsheets. The methods have included typewriter, handwritten, stamped, laser, offset, digitally printed books, letterpress books. In our case, it's the idea that dictates much of the project's physical form. The Zweite Enzyklopädie von Tlön, the second encyclopedia from Tlön, was something where we didn't want to be entrapped in the book itself. We believed that it would be truer for the artistic expression and this encyclopedic idea if we would break out of it, and we put our little books, individual broadsheets. There is one contains a little stack with like just words into folders. So we gave the collector the chance. I'm coming to an end slowly. The chance to reorganize this. Over the years, we've added illustrations and drawings and collages and many original texts. I would urge you, maybe if you come over and have a look at some of our books, I'll be happy to run you through, and that's it.